It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. I'm Dave Richmond along with my good friend, Kyle from LaGrange Barber. I think you're my friend, right?
Sometimes okay. Not.
Well, I guess it's kind of like the weather, it changes. So speaking of the weather, we have Kyle is here. Bubba has to work and do his day job. So the two of us are having a chance to do our, we're going to have our basketball preview. Big game tonight down in New Orleans as the Pirates are going down there. Hopefully they can finally get a road win. Tulane, they haven't won since December 17th. We're going to talk to, we got a big show. We got Todd Graffanini from Tulane, the play-by-play voice. He's going to come on with us. I feel for the guy. He's a great guy and a really tough season. They're 4-21, by the way, Kyle, on the year. And we'll be talking about that. And 0-13, hard to believe they're 0-13 in the league. I would think they'd have a few wins by now. But we'll be talking to the Graf. And also, Bubba and I had a chance to talk to this week Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News, legendary writer, and, of course, with the Big Network. He's a studio analyst for the Big Ten. And we'll talk about conference races, all to come on the show. But we're going to do a little bit of a roundtable right now. I know, very excited. I know on Pirate Radio, Ryan Robinson, one of the great additions to the John Gilbert staff, he had some really great news, right?
Yeah, last year, season ticket sales on opening day of ticket sales were around 80, and between 80 and 100. And this year, they were over 800. So that's a huge increase in first-day season ticket sales. And hopefully, you know, that pace will continue. People... Well, it's not so much the pace. It's if every damn body buys them, you know, April 1st, who cares, as long as they get them bought. Hopefully we'll continue that pace and season ticket sales will be up. I mean, need to get on the ground floor with Mike Houston. If you haven't bought season tickets in a couple years, buy this year. Get in on the ground floor with Mike Houston because he's going to build a winner here. Pirate football will be back. And, you know, you want to say you were there from the start. I can remember, David, I remember Skip Hall's first game being there as we beat Duke. I can remember Ruffin McNeil's first game, the Hail Mary game against Tulsa.
I was there.
Yeah.
The bleachers breaking.
Yes. So, you know, you want to be there as you build something, be there from the beginning on the ground floor. So get your season tickets. It's good to hear that it's a hot start. And we've had Ryan on the show, and we'll have Ryan on again, and I listened to his interview with Troy. And Ryan, he gets it. He is on. In fact, he said that some people the athletic department wish he would shut up about concession prices. That's one of his goals, is to get, if not all concession prices down, have some cheaper options on a regular basis. And so that is something I agree with wholeheartedly. At the baseball game the other day, I bought two barbecue sandwiches, a bottle of water, and a Coke. It's been $20.
That's a lot.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and it doesn't have to come down a whole lot. I mean, you know, instead of $4 or $3, you know, $4 for a bottle of water, how about $3? Instead of $6 for a barbecue sandwich, how about $5? I mean, it ain't like we're asking, you know, to sell things for $2. And you know, they're doing dollar dog night at basketball games coming up here at the end of the year. And baseball, in fact, all baseball games that are midweek, any games played Monday through Thursday, you can get dollar hot dogs this year at the baseball stadium. So Monday night for Air Force, dollar dogs.
And that's going to be, with the Falcons are a great model with fan-first pricing. And as I thought, which I was correct, I'm glad I was correct on something, they actually have sold more because if you think about it, if I'm paying say $4 for a Coke, okay?
Yeah,
how many $4
Coke?
Exactly. But if
the
you
only
have them,
time it works, Dave, is when it's 100 degrees out there and we got a 12:00 kickoff. Because I will drop $40 on water and Gatorade because I got to stay hydrated.
Do you remember the Appalachian State game with 400 people were taken out of the stadium?
I do. I drank so much water and Powerade that game. And another thing,
96 degrees, I believe that
day. Yeah, it was 100 and some heat index. But
yeah,
another thing that game that's kind of gross, but I'll tell it. People were leaving, and they were selling like liter bottles of water. And as people were leaving, and the stadium was emptying out in the second half, they would leave their liter bottles of water just sitting there. Now, I didn't pick them up and drink them, but I did pick them up and pour them over my head. I swear to God.
Yeah.
I grab one and pour it over my head and just soak myself. And about 20 minutes later, I'd be completely dry.
Yeah, it was. That was one of the worst. I think that's got to be the hottest game. You probably know, but that's probably got to be the hottest game on record.
I don't know in terms of temperature. Bubba may actually know that. But
we're not a stats guy. It's probably,
yeah, exactly.
It's not an outdoor.
I do like weather a lot, though. But
that's
the hottest game I remember being at.
I remember hot games, but that one was one that
it was next level hot. I'll tell you another one that was weirdly hot. I got to get my year right here. It was in 2002, I believe. We played Army in early October, and it was one of the hottest October games I've ever been to. And you just didn't prepare because it's October. I'm in my early 20s. I'm stupid. And it's early October. You don't even realize how hot it is. And I got dehydrated at that game, actually. And barely made it back to the car, started cramping up. It was terrible. But, hot games, man. I love it early season when we play our games at night. Sometimes TV dictates. Sometimes TV dictates you have to play a game early in the day, early season. But it sure would be nice to be able to hydrate yourself without breaking the bank. And something Troy mentioned to Ryan, and I know it, that some places will let you bring in at least one unopened bottle of water. I know I think Keenan Stadium allows that. I know Walnut Creek, well, I call it Walnut Creek. Crystal Coast.
Coastal Credit Union.
To me, it's still Hardee's Walnut Creek Amphitheater. They allow you to bring in up to a liter bottle of unopened water. So that'd be something that I think, even if they just do it for day games, that we should look at as allowing fans to bring in a bottle of water, an unopened bottle of water, even if it's just for day games, early season games, something like that.
Right. Like September games or,
correct,
or something. Or if the temperature's going to be 90 degrees or something crazy.
If the temperature's going to be above 80, allow people to bring in a bottle of water.
Yeah. Yeah, so we'll have to ask Ryan about that. And certainly that's a really good idea because the last thing we want is like the Appalachian State game with 400 people. And we know why probably some of them were taken out because they drank a whole bunch.
I'm going to tell you, going back to that thing, I'm a big boy. And, my wife, who, is not a big boy, she had to go under the stadium for the entire second half. I sat out there and toughed it out. I'm just hardcore like that. But there was a lot of people getting taken out of there. Yeah, and part of it was alcohol-related. Part of it was because they, drank too much. But my wife, for example, she didn't drink, and she couldn't handle it. She had to go under the stadium. She sat down and drank water and Gatorade down there and missed the entire second half.
Well, that was a tough thing. But, again, like you said, sometimes TV dictates it. Speaking of TV, I want to remind fans for the basketball game, since we're talking about the basketball preview, I want to remind fans that the game for Tulane will be on ESPNU. And do that. And we need to talk about, I don't think we did, before we move on, talk about baseball a little bit too. C. Austin Cox put up there that we had him on the show with the AAC podcast recently, a week ago or so. And he put up there that...
On Twitter,
that ESPN and the American are close to a deal. I've never, and other people I know, Hoist the Colors, I haven't seen anything. I just want to get your take on it because you and I both are
I have no
TV
idea.
Deal nerds.
I'm assuming if he's putting that out there,
he's hearing something, right?
Maybe he has some contacts, you know, with an AD at Cincinnati. Within the athletic office in Cincinnati, because that's where he's located. Maybe they're hearing that. Maybe he's got some contacts with the American in the offices. I don't know where he's getting that info from. If that's true, then great. That means it must be a pretty decent offer if we're not going to take it to open market. We'll see. I know in my head, I know what we're making now. We're making about $2 million a team. And I know in my head what I would hope we could get realistically.
What are you thinking?
Realistically, $6 to $8 million would be a success.
Yeah.
I think $10 million or above is
like
the
grand slam.
Yeah, that's the dream. I don't see it happening. It would be fantastic. I think it would take a grant of rights. I think if it's $3 to $4 million, I think that will be anywhere between $2 and $4 million. I think that's going to be a disappointment. I think the $5 million would everybody would be at least it's an improvement. We'll see. I know Mike Oresko's doing everything he can. There seems to be certain fan bases in the America that like Oresko and certain that don't. East Carolina fans all seem to love Mike Oresko, where I think Cincinnati fans, for example, aren't a big fan of his. So that's kind of interesting. It seems to be divided amongst the school's fan bases who likes Oresko and who doesn't.
I'm not usually in love with commissioners, but I have to say he's done a really good job. I mean,
let's be honest, Dave. His relationship with Terry Holland is part of the reason we got in the American, and we're not still.
Oh yeah, exactly. And you know, you look at obviously he has deep ties with Dave Hart, being an ESPN executive back in the day when we had Notre Dame and East Carolina were the only ones that were independent schools that had their own deals with ESPN because of relationship with Mike Oresko and Dave Hart. We wouldn't have the exposure that we did in the 90s if it wasn't for those two and obviously the Peach Bowl. But definitely Mike Oresko has been very good to East Carolina. I think that he's doing it. There's some people that I think that it's my interpretation, I'll put it that way, that they think that he's just a lot of hot air. That he's just a lot of talk and, you know, oh, well, we haven't got a power league yet. Well, people don't understand that, first of all, that's a mythical thing. The power league is a media-driven thing. It's not real. Their teams are, I guess, autonomous when it comes to making decisions.
Rules, yes, correct.
Rules,
decisions without having to use all the other Division I members.
But we are doing, like I've said before several times on this podcast, the American teams have agreed to do, and schools have agreed to do, everything that the Power Five, quote-unquote Power Five, are doing. We are winning games against these, quote-unquote, Power Five schools left and right. You look at a team like, we're talking about basketball, you look at Houston, look out for Houston. They could be, you know, tournament time, who knows, they could, you know, lay an egg the first round against a school you've never heard of in the basketball tournament. But you look at Houston basketball, a top 25 team, the best in the league. They could make a run. We'll see how. I don't want to jinx them, but they could really make a run against quote unquote the big boys. And so I feel like that he is doing an excellent job. He's doing everything he can to put us in the position that when it happens, I think what it's going to do is it'll happen that we will eventually get there. It's just a question of how long is it going to take, the next realignment, or I don't know.
All right. Time will tell. I think the TV deal, if somehow we could breach that at $10 million, the double-digit figure for a team, I think conversations begin right then. We'll see. But baseball, as we're dropping this on Saturday, there's two baseball games today. Because as we see here, if we're recording this on Friday, this week exposed our business. we just found out that the Friday night game has been put in a rain delay and rescheduled for Saturday. We're going to play two against Monmouth on Saturday.
And that's and hopefully we'll. We also found out today, being Friday, that today's game, I know Brian's mom had put out, Brian Packer's mom, Cherry, put out that he would not be playing, that he'd have an MRI. So we're praying that they're just doing that, I would assume, a precautionary measure to just to make sure that it's not like a break or something more than just the initial. I think he ran into the wall with his hand or in that first or second game the Friday night last week, so a week ago.
Well, you didn't see play a break on Sunday. On an X-ray. What they're looking for is more, it would be more like nerves and tendons,
right.
And things like that. So hopefully
he'll get good news. And there'll be nothing wrong. It's just a sore hand, bruise, or something along those lines. And he'll be back in the lineup soon because we need Pac-Man out there desperately. He's a huge part of our lineup. I mean, one of the most consistent hitters in all of baseball. So,
and a local kid out of D.H. Conley, who
exactly.
He's going to be. You're looking at right now. That's why I'm telling you guys, I think this team is on paper a super regional team, and I even think we have a chance to host a super regional, but you got to get there. I feel like it's looking like there's seven. I think there's something like it's a ridiculous number of guys that can be drafted in this year's group of a lot of juniors. There's just certain years, just like with any team, any basketball, baseball, football, there's certain special teams as far as players of a certain class. Like this junior class, one of the best we've seen in quite a while. So you kind of feel like that this is the year on paper with the number of people. We just pray that it won't be like 2017 where we have a whole bunch of pitchers, on paper.
Right.
Things look good, and then we had a whole bunch of injuries. So that's my concern. I told you guys that was my concern with the team was not the talent. Of course, the coaching, the recruiting, everything is, the classroom, they got like a 3-4
right.
or something GPA. I mean, everything is going right for the university as far as that baseball program. The elephant in the room for the baseball team is injuries. So getting rid of that injury bug. So hopefully they can do that. And we have the games of Monmouth. And by the way, folks, again, don't forget tomorrow night, Sunday night, we're going to have a special show, right, Kyle?
Yeah, Sunday night we're doing Sports Objective Extra Innings as we will recap the weekend series with Monmouth and get ready for Air Force on Monday night. We're going to be going live Sunday night, hopefully from 7 to 9. That's the plan. We're going to go live and you can call in. Dave, do you have that number? Do you need me to get it again?
Again, I walked away from my computer.
All right, well, hold on.
I had it up, and I knew you. Yeah.
Let me see if I can grab this here number. Dave, you entertain the folks while I find the number.
Okay, do you want me to sing or dance or
well,
talk
I don't
jokes
think dancing
or...
would entertain them on a podcast.
I know it won't.
Let's see if they're like, but, you know, hear you jiggle, or would that be me dancing?
It's
okay.
Theater of the mind. I can't
All
dance,
right, got so. The number. Got the number. You don't have to entertain anybody.
Okay.
Call in. We want you to call in. Look, call in, ask if you have questions. Hopefully we'll have Corey Glore joining us. If not, then, you know, you'll just have to listen to me, Dave, and Bubba. If you want to talk about the game, comments on the games against Monmouth, you know, talk about anything you saw, tell Dave how much he sucks. area code 909-265-9235. That's 909-265-9235. And call in and let's talk some baseball Sunday night as we look back at the weekend that was against Monmouth and get ready for Air Force and Elon Monday and Wednesday night. And it should be a lot of fun. And we hope we get a lot of listeners and a lot of people calling in. And you can check that out. Again, it will not be on all platforms live. You can listen on Apple.
I know Apple and Stitcher.
Apple, Stitcher,
Blog
Talk. Say again?
Yeah, iTunes and Apple. Some people
Stitcher,
go to iTunes to get it. But...
Blog Talk. That'll be where you can get it. And check our social media. We'll have a link up to we should be able to link it directly to Blog Talk and our social media, Facebook, Twitter, and also Hoist the Colors. And
Maybe we can put Igo on the spot. Maybe we can get Igo to join us, too.
You never know. You never know. And I'm sure we'll have some cameos. I've been reaching out to people. I said, look, even if you have, like, make a cameo, like, 2 minutes to say, hey, I'm sure there will be people. But we're going to have a lot of fun, and it's something we're starting. We believe in this baseball team, and it's something that we can, we're going to try to do as much as we can.
So think of it as fifth quarter for baseball.
Right. Right. So we'll have extra innings. It'll definitely be a weekly podcast, and we're trying very hard to make it live every single Sunday night. So just keep your thoughts and prayers. Keep your fingers crossed for us that we can do it every week. So live. And
if you're a lady, keep your legs crossed.
There you go. Be nice. Okay. So let's go to our first guest. Bubba and I had a chance to talk to Mike DeCourcy. Of course, a basketball game tonight. Big game on the road against the Tulane Green Wave. We'll be talking to Todd Graff Anini in just a little bit. Good old Graff. But first, well, Mike DeCourcy needs no introduction with the Sporting News, great writer for many years, and the big network for the Big Ten. Let's go to that interview right now. Very happy and honored to have our next guest back, Bubba. What a legend when it comes to college basketball.
Yeah, and of course, all the conference races are coming down the home stretch, and everybody's positioning themselves for postseason play. I'm very excited to have on Mike DeCourcy of the Sporting News. Mike, thank you so much for coming on the program.
Yeah. Gentlemen, how are you?
We're great. We're always excited to talk about college basketball. There's so much to talk about in so little time, so we want to get started with you. We had you on, obviously, right before the season started, so can you kind of give us I know there's not enough time in the day to get every storyline, if you will, in college basketball, but can you kind of give us some highlights of your thoughts of how the season's going so far?
Well, I think it's been dominated to an extent by the force of nature that Zion Williamson is and has revealed himself to be. He's an amazing physical specimen. He's obviously an extremely well-trained athlete, and he's gotten an enormous amount of publicity. He had it coming in to an extent because of his YouTube videos and those sorts of things, and then pushing that onto a larger stage, it's obviously intensified, and he's handled it beautifully. And I really admire him for that, because there are a lot of athletes who have gotten that kind of attention and been ruined by it, haven't really understood how to deal with it. And he's handled it well, and Duke has handled a lot, sort of facilitating but limiting to an extent how intense the heat can be, and it's been great to this point in the season. Obviously, March is going to take it up another notch or two or three, but it's been wonderful to see. The people that I've spoken to, who spent a lot of time around them and who've observed him from an NBA scouting standpoint and that sort of thing, are really impressed by how invested he is in his team, and that's such an important part of succeeding in this circumstance, this single year of college. If you're there, you should be all in. And if you're not all in, it's okay. There are other ways to become a pro basketball player. You can go, you can't play in the NBA, but you can go play in the G League or whatever. The best way is to go to college, because it's the best training and the best showcase for you. But if it's not for you, you don't have to do it. But at Zion, it was, it's for him, and he is all in, and I think that's been great to see. And it's really been to this point, although, Duke's not a perfect team by any stretch, and they showed that in falling behind Louisville by 23 points. But they are an excellent team, and they are going to be very difficult for everyone who has to confront them in the NCAA tournament.
I think about the analogy, Mike. It's kind of like with Duke, speaking of that Louisville, it's almost like they're a heavyweight fighter, and you're just waiting for that knockout punch. And I just wonder, you also have to be careful. The flip side is you have to be careful when you do that, where you're not playing at your best, that a team can come up in the tournament, in the ACC tournament and in the NCAA tournament, and knock you out.
I agree with that, without a doubt. I think you make a very good point there, and it's the sort of thing that that defines legacies, I guess you would say.
Right. Bubba,
Yeah, I was going to say, taking a look at the ACC, obviously you talk about Zion Williamson and Duke and the team they are this year. You also have Virginia and North Carolina right there battling for the regular season title. How do you see that playing out? And then after that, when you're taking a look at the Big Dance, you have that next pack of, I think it's like four teams where you have like the Hokies, the Virginia Tech, Louisville, FSU, Syracuse. How many do you see the ACC getting in the tournament?
Well, I think at this point, if you're talking about numbers, the line is drawn somewhere between, you know, it basically NC State would have to screw up seriously to not get in. Clemson has a lot of work to do. Projections and that sort of thing have them in, but there's nothing firm about that. There's no one else that at this point that's a candidate, though. Pitt, Wake, Miami, Georgia Tech, Notre Dame, Boston College, no shot. And honestly, that's been really helpful to the ACC, to be frank. The fact that the bottom of their league has been compliant, for lack of a better term, has been great for the ACC. Whereas in the Big Ten, the bottom of their league is much better. Much stronger, and that's caused problems for teams that are basically the middle, for Nebraska, for Indiana and Minnesota, those sorts of teams, Illinois and Rutgers and Penn State. They've all been really strong. They've got a lot of ability. They've struggled to win games at times, but when they get one, they usually take it from someone who needs it. So that's been a real bonus for the ACC to have that. You know, Clemson doesn't, you know, they have to survive those other teams, but they don't have to worry about them as much as they would, say, if they were to encounter an Illinois or someone like that. So I think you're looking at 3, 6, 9 teams. It's going to be hard to keep. Certainly 8 is close to a lock, but, you know, they could get 9 if Clemson is able to avoid disaster.
You were talking about NC State. One question I had for you, the 24-point game, that was incredible against Virginia Tech, who has a big game tonight as we're recording this on Monday against Virginia. Do you think, is that a problem for Kevin Keats moving forward, or do you just think that was a bad day at the office?
Well, I mean, they came out the next day and scored like 95. So,
yeah
I mean, it was terrible. Bad day doesn't even come close to describing that. It was a horrific day, and it's one that I'm sure that Kevin basically went in there and said, "Look, this is not us. This is not, and this is not who we are. We can't play like this again. But don't, you know, just forget about it, because there was nothing to be gained from that experience. Just a big L, and you know, and I'm sure that it was embarrassing to the players to an extent for a while, but." It's not the sort of basketball that they ordinarily play, so it's one that will stick with them for a little bit, but I don't think it'll define their season. I mean, they've got the opportunity to get big victories. They've got the opportunity to do well in the ACC and NCAA tournament. So I just don't think there's much to be gained from dwelling on that. If I were a member of the Wolfpack or a fan of their team.
And another question, staying on Tobacco Road with you, Mike, close to where Bubba lives in the Winston-Salem area. What's the talk? Do you think Danny Manning, is he on the hot seat? What do you think about his time at Wake Forest?
Well, you know, I'm not a believer in that. You know, putting people on the hot seat, that's not my job. You know, I mean, I don't understand why writers, analysts engage in that. I mean, when we get information that there's something solid, you know, obviously it's not, you know, that the team in year 5 is not what he would want, or fans would want, or administration would want, or donors would want. I mean, we're not kidding anybody. To get beaten as badly as they did by Carolina, and I believe that was a home game if I remember correctly, that's really poor. And as I said, especially when you're this far into the development of your program. But it's up to Wake Forest to decide what they want to do going forward. You know, we've seen Danny coach very well and build really good programs, both, you know, at Tulsa and early here. I think they made the NCAAs in their third year. So it's up to them to decide whether or not they can do it again, and whether they're moving in the right direction, even if the record says no. I mean, we look at at Jeff Capel, who's basically in the same spot in the standings, and we know it's going in the right direction because we saw what the alternative was. I haven't watched enough of this particular Wake team to know whether they're going forward or not. I know what the results say, but I think that it's up to the administration and the people who support it to decide whether or not. I can only say this: change for change's sake is the dumbest thing in sports. Oh, freaking, let's change. That means you don't have any idea what you're doing. The results don't tell you whether a program's going in the right direction or not. Whether the coach still reaches the players, and whether he can then convince those players who need to become parts of his program to make it better, that's what dictates whether or not a program is going in the correct direction. And there are lots of occasions when programs are not, and they need to be changed. But there's this simple reflex action in sports now that whatever you do, just change coaches. It doesn't fix everything.
Right. You have to be invested in the program. And I mentioned close to home for us, obviously, being an ECU alum. When you said that about the record, East Carolina is playing much better under Coach Joe Dooley and the rock star staff he has. They're 9-16 overall and 2-10 in the American. But they've been competitive so close so many times this year, Mike. They should have about maybe 12 or 13 wins, but it is what it is. But you're right about the record where I hate the term. They're the best 9-16 team in the country or something like that. I hate that, but definitely we know that my alma mater is headed in the right direction.
Yeah, what I worry about for ECU is whether or not that they can, whether or not they can reach the point where people will be pleased with the results. What do people expect the program to be? Do they expect it to be something it's never been? I worry about that in regards to someone like ECU. And they're in a league in which, they've got people who've hung banners. UConn's had four since 99. Cincinnati got two in the early 60s. Memphis has been to the Final Four and was one free throw away from winning a title. So, and ECU has not even been successful really in the mid-major leagues they were in before they then climbed because of their football. And I'm not saying that East Carolina made a bad decision to climb into the American for football. I think it was the right decision. They're in with good people. But at that point, you have to look at how do we become more successful in basketball? And where do we draw the line, or where do we set the bar we're doing well. We're doing, this is better. This is entertaining. We're competitive. Is that enough? Or do you go 4 or 5 years and you haven't made a tournament and say, oh, well, we didn't make a tournament. Let's try again. That's what a lot of programs do. And as a result, they never get any better.
We can know that. Bubba, I know with the time we have remaining, we want to talk about the different conferences, right? But you think, before we move on, can we mention Houston? Because I think that Calvin Sampson's done a tremendous job with that program.
Oh, he has. Calvin's an excellent coach and always has been. And the experience at Indiana, Calvin did not handle going in Indiana perfectly. He probably didn't deserve the fate that he got. But if Indiana made the mistake of hiring a coach whose program at Oklahoma had an active NCAA case that hadn't been ruled upon yet, they didn't understand what the fan base's reaction. There were still a lot of people that were in their fan base, in their alumni base, that were bitter about how Knight was handled and used the circumstance that developed at Indiana as a means of protest for what happened with Coach Knight, and so it was a poor decision to hire him under their circumstance, and Calvin, like I said, didn't handle it perfectly, didn't recruit all the players he recruited probably weren't ideal for the situation at Indiana. So that episode's still out there, and this is his chance to erase it. And I think he's doing a great job with that. He's built the program up to NCAA tournament level, now to conference championship contender level. And you know, by the end of this year, people might not talk so much about Indiana anymore when his night when his name comes up, because he's establishing a new standard for himself. This is probably the best team he's ever coached. Maybe not the most talented team he's ever coached. I mean, he had some terrific players at Oklahoma, and his Indiana teams had DJ White and Eric Gordon. And so this is probably not the most talented team he's had, but this is about the most together he's ever had a team. These guys are totally bought into each other and to his system and his way of coaching and his way of winning. And, you know, they are not head and shoulders above the rest of the league, but they are getting results at head and shoulders above the rest of the league. The job they did against Cincinnati, shutting them down the last 6 minutes or so, in the home game. I'm looking forward to the rematch there. It would be really cool if the conference championship were on the line, because they are pretty evenly matched. But, you know, obviously UCF and Temple and the rest of the middle of the league will have something to say about whether those two teams are still in the same order that they are now.
What about the Big Ten? What do you think, in your neck of the woods, how do you think, being a studio analyst for the big network for the Big Ten, what do you think about that league?
Well, it's been from the beginning, and honestly, much to my surprise, because a year ago, it was not a strong. I shouldn't say it that way. It was a poor season for the Big Ten last year. They got four teams in the NCAA tournament. They probably deserved four teams. Nebraska went 13-5 in the league last year and didn't get in the tournament. And again, didn't probably deserve. It wasn't that far away, but they needed a win or two more, and they didn't get it. And so they were left out. Penn State probably needed a win or two more, didn't get it. They were left out at 9-9. If they'd had a better league record, they might have made it, but they didn't achieve that. So we came into this year thinking it would be better. And I know when I looked at trying to rank the teams 1-14, that when I got to the bottom of the league at the beginning of the year, I was like, I don't really hate this team. Why do they have to be 13th? I don't think this team's going to be bad. Why are they 14th? And that's really the way it's played out. Not all the teams that I had at the bottom are at the bottom. But, I mean, Penn State is a team that came into the year with three really solidly established frontline players that we thought would make the team strong. And it hasn't quite played out that way. Their freshman guards have had moments but haven't been really consistent. Michael Watkins, the center, who's such a physical force, has had a tough year dealing with some ailments and that sort of thing. He hasn't really been 100%. So Penn State has not quite been there, but they have been always competitive. They just pushed Purdue the other day. They beat Michigan, which was the number one team in the league at the time they did, and one of the top 10 teams in the country when they did it. So they showed that the bottom of that league is really potent and powerful. You look at Illinois, a team that right now is one of the hottest in the league. They played an unbelievably difficult schedule in the non-conference, and it really punished them. And so they're still five games under 500, even though they're within two games of 500 in the league. They just really struggled out of conference because of the difficulty of their schedule. So you look top to bottom, it's in my estimation, without a doubt, the strongest league in the country, which doesn't necessarily mean that they've got the most great teams. I think that's clear that the top of the ACC is much stronger. There are more national championship contenders in the ACC and stronger national championship contenders in the ACC than there are in the Big Ten. But it's been entertaining to watch because you never know from night to night. I mean, every game that's on is a game that could go either way. And that's, you know, I think that's the goal for a league, is to be that kind of competitive. If you're looking to get the most teams in the NCAA tournament, it's probably not the best way for it to be.
What about you wanted to talk about the SEC, right, Bubba?
Yeah, with the SEC, you obviously had those big three with Kentucky, of course, who collected the big win over Tennessee. on Saturday night. And then you also have, in addition to those two, LSU. Besides those three, and you have, I guess it's Ole Miss and then maybe Mississippi State. Yeah, I think it's Mississippi State of those two that still have some work to do. I believe they're 500 in league play. What do you think the SEC ends up with, four teams in the dance?
I think it'll be more than that. You mentioned the three that are at the top and contending for the title, and that's going to be a fun race to watch because there's a lot at stake there. First of all, I'm a big believer in conference championships as an important thing, and I know that a lot of people in the media want you to just completely forget about that, but I don't buy that. I think conference championships are meaningful. And I'll give you an example. When I went to an event in Kansas, I think it was 5 years ago, so the streak was about at eight or nine then, and there were about 1,000 Kansas fans in the room, and I asked them, I just said, raise your hand if the streak of conference championships is meaningful to you. And every hand in the room went up. So conference championships do mean something. So LSU versus Tennessee versus Kentucky, that's fascinating to watch. And to me, more fascinating, honestly, than whether or not Florida gets in. It's more obviously more important to Florida whether they get in. But as an observer of college basketball, the first thing I want to know is who's going to win the league. But beyond that, South Carolina has been the kind of problem for the SEC that Illinois has been for the Big Ten, in that South Carolina played horrifically in non-conference, and I'm not sure they had quite the level of excuse, let's say, that Illinois had. Illinois, brand new team, basically, relatively new system for a lot of the players, and an impossible schedule. South Carolina had a challenging schedule, but not to the level that they performed. And now they're one of the most dangerous teams in the league. They're 8-4, stand fourth, I guess, in the league, tied with Ole Miss. So I can't see South Carolina getting in to the tournament without closing basically 5-6 consecutive wins. And that hasn't been who they are, so I doubt that'll happen. But Alabama's still in the hunt. Florida is still in the hunt. They had a big result over the weekend that they had to have. You look at Auburn, they're still in the hunt, even though they're conference record is mediocre, only 6-6. They still have an overall profile of an NCAA tournament team. So I think they'll probably wind up. I mean, even Arkansas is not totally out of it. They'd have to do some pretty amazing things down the stretch. So I think the league winds up with 5 or 6, and with an unbelievable confluence of events that's completely fortuitous for the league, they could maybe find a 7th. It's been an interesting year in the SEC, and I think honestly, in some ways, even though they sort of made it back a year ago, I think this has been an even better year for the league, even if they get fewer teams than they got in a year ago.
Mike, a moment ago you were talking about Kansas. You kind of created a good segue there for me. Of course, the Jayhawks, year in, year out in the Big 12, they're at the top. But this year, right now, it's K-State. So talk a little bit about that league and who you like.
Is nobody an acceptable answer for that? I mean, I just don't see in that conference a level of consistent performance. And I guess some of that is the fact that they are very well balanced. But Kansas State has an opportunity to really put a lock on the league. I mean, not that they would have clinched it or anything like that, but they've got a home game against an excellent opponent in Iowa State. You've got to at least be in that game. And while they weren't blown out, I mean, Iowa State owned the game for 40 minutes. I was really surprised by Kansas State's effort in that. And I know that Dean Wade got hurt along the way, but he wasn't injured when Iowa State walked in and just said, this game is ours at the tip. What I keep seeing in that conference is a continual series of disappointments. Here's a chance for this team to make a statement, and the statement is always, we're not as good as you think we are. And maybe that doesn't end up mattering much in March because these teams are good. I mean, I saw Texas Tech play Duke and play them brilliantly, ultimately fading in the end, but played a brilliant 35 minutes. I saw Kansas play Michigan State at the beginning, and now I know they're a different team now without Udoka Azubuike, but at that point, they were fantastic. I know it was only game one, but I know then that there's that level of basketball inside. We all saw what Iowa State did to a reasonably full-strength Kansas, although I don't think Doak played in that game. So they've all played really well at times. But often in this particular season, when presented with great opportunity, they've retreated. And I mean each of the teams that are significant in this league have retreated from big moments. So that's kind of a concern for me to an extent. When we've seen teams in the other leagues stumble, it's never been at that big moment. I mean, like Duke goes and, okay, they blow one to at home to Syracuse, game they shouldn't lose, okay. You know, Virginia had its big moment, and they kind of fell off the stage there. But then they came right back against Carolina on the road and said, yeah, we're as good as you think we are. Michigan, you know, okay, they blow one on the road to Penn State, and it does affect the fact that now that other teams are still – you know, within a game as opposed to before, maybe a game or and a half or two games back, whatever. But, you know, then they come back and answer that with, you know, they've got a tough game against Maryland and they answer it right back. That's the difference, I think, right now between the Big 12 and just about every other major conference, excepting the Pac-12, which has problems that the Big 12 hasn't even thought about.
It's funny you bring up the Pac-12. I was going to say, and of course, you had the Washington Huskies, 11-1 in league play, and then everybody else has at least four losses. You have Oregon State, a program that has historically struggled immensely, and they're having a nice year. And then, of course, you have Bobby Hurley down at Arizona State. How many do you see the Pac-12 getting, three or maybe four?
Oh boy, are you like the Pac-12's like PR guy?
Yeah, I was going to say, and that's being generous.
that's the most generous estimate I've ever heard. can you buy me Christmas presents? Because like,
I'll see what I
mean.
Can
you're
I'll
just like a sweetheart here.
Yeah.
Honestly, this is true. If Washington wins the Pac-12 tournament, at this point, now Arizona State still could maybe change this a little. It depends on how they close. But as it stands now, and I know now doesn't mean, you know, I yell at people all the time for making projections based on as it stands now. But I mean, I could see them getting one if Washington wins the league tournament.
Wow!
I wouldn't be shocked at one. I do believe that Arizona State is alive for a second. I don't think that anyone else is, barring, you know, going from here to the end without losing. And then at least put, you know, Oregon State, here to the end without losing, they put themselves in the conversation. I don't think anyone else can say that in the league. So that's how thin the pool is. And again, Arizona State probably doesn't have to go here to the end without losing, but they have to come pretty close. And that's why it wouldn't shock me. Now, I mean, Washington is a terrific team, but they'll go into that tournament with different motivations than every other team, because Washington, unless they lose from here to the end every game, Washington will go in knowing that they're in, and it's just a question of establishing seeding from there. But every other team in that league probably will go into that tournament thinking, we got to be, you know, if we get the auto, we're in, and that may be the only way. And so that changes the chemistry of a conference tournament.
Are there other teams that you're looking at across the nation that maybe they're not on our radar, Mike, that have a good shot in some of the smaller leagues to begin at some surprises, if you will?
Well, I think you look at Wofford right now at 15-0 in a really strong Southern Conference. I mean, we're not just talking about, okay, Wofford's a great team and then everybody else in their league is wanting. That's not who this is. I mean, UNCG, Greensboro, Furman, East Tennessee State are all excellent mid-major teams. Really good. Any other, you know, stick them in any one of a half dozen other mid-major leagues, and that team is right there. You know, they're in first or they're hard second. Wofford is leaving all these teams in the dust. I would be shocked at this point. Again, pending results to the end of the year. I would be shocked at this point if Wofford is not in the NCAA tournament one way or the other. it would, you know, for the purpose of getting in, I would say don't challenge the committee by losing in the quarters, you know, to Western Carolina or Mercer or whoever. Don't do that. I mean, because I saw Butler with a great team in 2002. I think they were 22-5 or something. They went out in the quarters of their tournament, the Horizon League tournament, and lost to Wisconsin Green Bay, which was the eighth team in their league. I think there were only eight in the Horizon then. And so they blew, and they got left out, and they dared the committee to leave him out, and the committee said, okay, you're out. And it was a terrible decision, but it happened. So don't, Wofford, they go challenge them. But if they lose in the semis to a UNCG or a Furman or an ETSU, depending on how the, you know, who finishes fourth, I don't think that leaves them out, because that's not a bad loss. A neutral court loss to one of those four teams, not going to be a bad loss. So, you know, to make it easy, you win it, or to make it easy, you play in the final. But I think Wofford right now, with what they've accomplished, I think it would be leaving them out based on a reasonable projection, and I set the parameters for you. Leaving them out as a team that loses no more than one league game in regular season and makes at least the semis of the Southern Conference tournament, if they left that team out, it would be one of the most egregious in NCAA tournament history. So I don't think that'll happen. And that's one of the interesting things about the introduction of the net ranking. The NCAA evaluation tool is the full name. They call it the net now. No more RPI. When that was introduced, people thought that it was going to squish the mid-majors. And many people thought it was a conspiracy designed to squish the mid-majors. So we don't just have, you know, funny conspiracy talk in, you know, politics and government and all that. We have it in college basketball, too. And yet it's turned out to really be a strengthener for a team like Wofford. I believe that the committee, if faced with, you know, with the scenario I presented, no more than one more league loss, well, no more than one league loss, because they haven't lost any now, and then a semifinal performance, I think the pressure will be on the committee to sort of verify their belief in the net ranking by taking Wofford in.
And if you're, and I'll say this to add what you're saying, if you're a true basketball fan, college basketball, then you want to see a variety of teams that maybe you've never heard of. I know, Bubba, we were talking last week about Loyola Chicago, who they make a great run, a Cinderella team, makes it to the Final Four. That's what makes March Madness special. And if you have a whole bunch of, sorry to the big leagues, but if you have a whole bunch of mediocre teams from the big leagues, it's kind of boring. That's just my opinion. If you work in a league office or you're a fan of a certain league, then you want as many ACC schools or Big Ten schools. But when it comes to, for me, college basketball as a fan, I want to see a lot of those schools that may not get a lot of press.
Let me say this about that, okay? I think, first of all, what we have to remember is that because the NCAA structure, the tournament structured as it is, insists upon 32 conference championships into the field automatically. Conference champions into the field automatically. So they already get, and then you whittle out seven of them, which are basically major conferences. And so now that's 24. So 24 out of 68, roughly a third of the field. Okay? So they're already getting roughly a third of the field presented to them. I don't want to say given to or handed or whatever, but they already get roughly a third of the field. So the idea that the mid-major teams don't get a break, and others in the media, oh, give them a chance, give them a break. Don't give them anything except what they earn, but they haven't done that. Okay? They have not given those teams what they've earned because they've established a standard in which who you play is more important than how you play. That's historically been what they care about. They tricked it up to so that that's what you know, it's a scheduling competition and not a basketball competition too often. And that's, you know, that's, I've had a problem with that for years, and I went back, this was 6 or 7 years ago, and I looked at the success rate in the tournament for teams that win more than 80% of their regular season games. and you compare it to the success rate for teams that get into the conference, get into the NCAA tournament at basically 500 in their conference. Teams that win 80% of their games, and I'm talking about, doesn't matter who you are. You could be Loyola. I mean, Loyola doesn't happen in, you know, from nowhere. Loyola didn't, you know, luck out and win the Valley and then luck out and win four games in the tournament. They dominated their league, and they won their automatic bid, so they got in, and then they went on and made the Final Four. If they hadn't won their conference tournament, they may not, probably would not have gotten in. And that's where we've really struggled. And that's why I've always been bothered by the idea that it's a scheduling competition. You know, we look at teams that have done really well in the past and didn't get in. And I always look back to, I think it was 2015, in the Metro Atlantic, and the team whose exclusion always bothered me was Monmouth. And I think it was 2015 or maybe it was 2016. And they went out and they beat Notre Dame and they beat Georgetown and they beat SC. And none of those games obviously was at home. So Georgetown didn't turn out to be great and maybe SC didn't. But they played high major teams. They did everything they could. Then they dominated their league. They went, I think they went, if I remember correctly, 17-3 in their league. I think they played a 20-game schedule. And then people dinged them in the committee room because they lost those three conference games. And, you know, they were all on the road, and they were all to teams, you know, that were not elite because they're in the Metro Atlantic, and they didn't take them. And it was just an absolutely preposterous decision. But that's what they've done too many times. They need to give those teams what they earn. So if you dominate a league in the way that Wofford has, and then you don't get an automatic, it shouldn't be about, well, you don't have enough high-level wins. It should be about, you're a great team. You just don't have enough high-level wins because you don't get enough opportunities to get them.
Right. And there's a, well, Mike, I appreciate the visit. I know that we've kept you probably longer than we should have, but I enjoy talking college basketball, and you're one of the legends in the business. And, Mike, how can people follow you on Twitter and social media?
Very easy to follow me on Twitter, at TSN Mike. I've been there at that handle for 10 years, TSN Mike. And if you are into Facebook as well, I have an author page. Mike DeCourcy is my author page, and love to have you there too. And, of course, if you prefer to just go directly to sportingnews.com, always welcome to do that.
Great stuff in the Sporting News and the Big Ten, Big Network studio analyst, Mike DeCourcy. Thank you so much, and hope to have you again soon.
Oh, absolutely, guys. I enjoyed it.
Great job. Appreciate Mike DeCourcy. He doesn't have to come on with us, a big name that he is. And he took the time to be with us, Kyle. And I know you work for a living, so you couldn't be there with us, but he was a great guy, and appreciate him very much.
Yeah, I was able to join you guys for the interview because I was working, but I'm grateful that he was kind enough to join us here on the Sports Objective podcast.
First, I definitely need some hearing aids. For a second there, I thought you said you were twerking, but that's a visual.
That's correct. I could sympathize twerking. That's right. You got it. That's what I said.
It's like Terry the other night with, he said trophies, but we thought it was something else. But, oh, my gosh,
somebody actually messaged me. Was it Andrew? It may have been Andrew. God almighty, I can't say his last name right now. But if somebody messaged me and said that they thought he said the exact same thing we thought he said.
Anyway, so... that was priceless. That's one of those moments you're not expecting when you prepare for a podcast, but that's podcast gold right there. I appreciate you. That visual in my head, I'm trying to get that delete out of my head. Kyle twerking, that would be that would be great.
Nobody wants to see that.
Anyway, my
the one place I'm not fat.
If you haven't seen, you've got to meet Kyle, and you definitely can. April 13th, we'll have a big show, a live event again. We're working on that, folks, so you'll get the chance to see Kyle definitely then. And we got some other stuff we're working on. As the time, the year goes by, we'll unveil that, shall we say.
Well, so we got the basketball game. Let's talk a few minutes, and then we'll get to our next interview with Graf. Great guy. Appreciate him coming on. This is 0-9 right now on the road. It's been a really tough ride for the Pirates. 9-16, by the way, Kyle, overall. You know, when I think I said that a podcast or two ago, that 9-16, you know, everybody that doesn't know the program very well, you see 9-16 and you go, oh my God, you know, this and that. But if you really follow the program closely, you know that it's been a lot better than what we've had in the past.
Yeah, we played hard. We've been in a lot of games. It's Joe Dooley's first year. We got a young basketball team. We need some size. We need some outside shooters. So he'll do the, he'll address these issues for recruiting. If we get the talent in here, look, bottom line is if we play like we have been playing in terms of effort and we have more talent, we win basketball games. It's as simple as that.
Right. We're so close.
Yeah. So we'll get there. It'll take time. Tulane's struggling way even more than we are at 4-21. Haven't won a game in conference all year. 4-21 is correct, right?
Yes.
They have not won a game in conference all year.
0-13. I mean, isn't that amazing? 0-13. There's 18 conferences.
Somebody's either going to win a road game, being East Carolina, or somebody's going to win a conference game, and that'll be Tulane. So somebody's going to win.
Somebody's going to lose.
Exactly. And Graf, as Graf will say coming up here in a minute, there's no ties in basketball.
That's right. And we want to definitely tell you folks, make sure that you definitely let's support the Pirates coming back. They've got, you know, some games coming up, I know, and we want to make sure that people come out there. I know that that's the one thing that's once they start winning, everything will be fine and a whole bunch of people will come. But let's show Coach Dooley and his staff. We need to have, and especially for the guys like Isaac Fleming, Addison Hill, those guys are seniors. Let's go out there and support them. We're Pirate fans, and they've been decent crowds, but they haven't been as bad as I've seen in the past. But I know we can do a look. We can only control what we control. In this case, being Pirate Nation, we need to get out there and support the Pirates. And I know a lot of people are, but the ones that you're on the bubble about, well, we're not really whatever. Go and support Coach Dooley. We're heading the right direction, and again, with that, they're out recruiting every single day, and you know we trust. I go 1,000%. Being a good friend of the show and being the first guest ever, he's saying that there's, you know, these guys are 100% ECU. So if we can land a couple that he has 100%, if that's true, what he's saying, which I trust him, then in the next 2 years, you could see the Pirates. Instead of being the cellar dwellers of the American, maybe they're in the middle of the pack at least in the next couple of years. I mean, I could see that. I don't think it's conference championships, but I do believe that they could be middle of the pack where they could knock off the top tier, you know, the Houstons of the world, the UCFs of the world, those guys. So we'll have to wait and see how that plays out. Let's go now to Todd Graffanini. He's the play-by-play voice of the basketball team, the football team, and the baseball team. And so we had a chance to talk to him for Tulane, the play-by-play voice, Todd Graffanini. And let's go to Graf now. Well, the Pirate basketball team has a big game on the road, and one of our favorite guests, we got to have him back, of course. They're playing down in the Big Easy in New Orleans on Saturday night, and that's against the Tulane Green Wave. And we have the play-by-play voice, Todd Graffanini. Todd, thank you so much for coming back on.
Thanks, gentlemen. Good to be here.
We wanted to have you on. Obviously, anytime we have an excuse to have you on, but certainly the Pirates and the Green Wave, somebody's got to win the game, right?
Something's got to give. That's what they tell me. Yeah, so someone will walk out of there with a win Saturday night. And, there are no ties in basketball. So, we've obviously got a very long losing streak. And I mean, that, you know, when we talked last time, we were in Greenville and kind of think about it, you know, that was really the closest we've come to winning a ball game, and you know, just kind of let it slip through the hands, and you know, the streak has continued. So, you know, a lot of people, kind of local people, and this is no slight at East Carolina, but they're just kind of saying this is probably the best chance Tulane has left of winning. So, you know, you never know every time you throw the ball up, anything can happen. But, I mean, if you just look at sheer numbers on paper, that I would probably say that would be somewhat accurate. But then you look at East Carolina guys, and they've won five straight games in New Orleans. So, you know, numbers are numbers, and you got to play it.
Well, looking at how is it being an announcer when, as much as you love, I know Tulane, and it's been really tough. I didn't realize it was 15 games now, losing streak.
Yeah, last win was December 17th. So,
oh my God.
Yeah, it's been before Christmas. There's been no Christmas joy here in New Orleans. But it's been a long time. You know, it's kind of interesting. We just started baseball season last weekend. We got a big series coming up starting tonight with Ole Miss at home. My. So I'm actually calling a doubleheader tomorrow with basketball and baseball. But yeah, you know, the baseball team's 5-0. We've won more games in baseball in a week than the entire basketball season. It's kind of
wow.
Yeah,
we know that feeling. Put that.
Well, you know, the Pirates started out pretty decently. I know they lost the other night against Campbell, but I follow those guys pretty. Yeah,
we're without two of our best bats.
Yeah, that hurts, man. I mean, you go on the road, and we have the same deal here in New Orleans. I mean, you got in the state of Louisiana, when you play midweek games, you're not playing anybody who you can throw your glove out there and expect to win each and every time. And I know it's the same for ECU when they go on the road. It's tough, man. And if you don't bring your best each and every Tuesday or Wednesday, you got a chance to slip up. So, yeah, we got. Got Ole Miss tonight, and let's see what happens on the hardwood tomorrow night, too.
It's interesting because with Mike Dunleavy Sr., one of the questions that came to mind before the interview, I want to ask you, how is he still holding the team together? How is he playing out with the fans being, I think it's 4-21. It's just hard to believe that the streak and everything. How are things going there?
Well, you know, as far as the team, it's gone remarkably well. Now, I will say this. The last couple of games, I've started to see just kind of, you know, the looks in these kids' eyes where it's just a here we go again type of deal. And when you've gotten beat down for so long and have lost for so long, when you give yourself a chance and you give yourself some hope to win a ball game, and then it goes in the other direction for a 5-6 minute span, and then all of a sudden, you know, a single-digit deficit is now 20 or 25. That's when you start to see now, geez, you know, what are we going to do? But, you know, I've actually talked with Coach Dunleavy on his show a lot about this. When you're in the midst of a streak like we are, it's very easy to see teams just kind of fall apart and just start pointing fingers and arguing. Because I've seen it, guys. I have seen it. But that has not happened this year. I think it's a testament to the coaches to try to keep things together. Now, do I see frustration on a night-in and night-out basis? Absolutely. There's a lot of frustration. But it has not been the type of deal where you're seeing infighting and finger-pointing. So that's a good sign. Though, you know, the light's at the end of the tunnel as far as the rest of the regular season. I don't know where it's going to come from, but geez, man, guys, they need to win a game. I mean, they need to win a game. It's just been a long, long year, and a win would do wonders, regardless what happens going into the tournament, and then you'll see. But going into the tournament with an 0-18 record is not what anybody had envisioned.
No, not at all, especially when you have a great coach. And certainly the Pirates are looking for their first road win of the year. They've come close several times, but you have the Pirates 0-9 and the Green Wave 0-8. But it just seems like with the Pirates, they fall short so many times. They fight hard, and they come up short. And that's one thing Coach Dooley has done a nice job of. We were talking about they've really done a nice job keeping the team together. They're working extremely hard in practice. I know people say that, but they really are. And they've been able to somehow, some way, except for the Wichita State game. I know, Kyle, we've talked about that.
Yeah.
The effort was not there in the Wichita State game at home. But other than that, they've been really fighting hard.
Yeah, I would say along those lines, because there's going to be, when you're in a tough stretch like, you know, both teams are, you're going to see that one game that kind of is sideways and doesn't really belong with the rest of the sample size. And for Tulane, that was Tulsa a week ago. That was a game where Tulsa came in and was just begging to be beaten. I mean, Tulsa just – the first 10 minutes of the ball game, Tulsa did not play well at all. And you're thinking to yourself on the court, you're going, all right, well, this is a game that we can kind of, you know, snatch and get this thing going in the right direction. And it was a 24-24 game, and then it was not a 24-24 game. Tulsa started to make some shots. They went on a run, and what really irked Coach Dunleavy after that game was the fact that, because we, you know, despite the record, we've been a pretty solid rebounding team, especially in conference play. And Tulsa, who is not, as a matter of fact, Tulsa is the worst rebounding team in our league because they play a matchup zone, and it's just tough to rebound the basketball that way. They out-rebounded us by 12, and that got under the craw of Coach Dunleavy and the staff. And that was kind of the outlier game, so to speak, where it was kind of evident that guys just weren't really, you know, giving what they needed to give for 40 minutes. And, you know, we haven't seen that since or before, but, you know, again, it's hard when you're in a stretch like we are to not just kind of be, oh boy, here we go again type of deal.
Switching back to baseball for a minute, how's the weather in New Orleans this weekend? Aaron Greenwell, we got a lot of rain in the forecast. Going to try our best to get the three games in with Monmouth. You guys got nice sunny weather for the Ole Miss series?
I think we're going to be okay. Tomorrow looks a little iffy. We're going to get it in tonight, no problem. The other thing is we have turf, so if as long as it's not thunder and lightning and it's not a deluge, we'll play. I mean, they played the two games against Lamar back on Tuesday and Wednesday, basically in a heavy mist. So they were able to get both games in. And like I said, if it's even a drizzle, you can play because we've got turf. But tonight should be very, very nice. You know, low 70s at first pitch. Tomorrow the front's coming through. So if we don't get it in tomorrow, there's still plenty of time because Ole Miss bust down here. So we could play a doubleheader Sunday if we need be. And Sunday's supposed to be very nice, like lower mid-60s and a little cooler than it is right now. So we'll get all three games in, and I know it's very important because there's going to be a lot of interest right now. I know a lot of Ole Miss fans are going to come down here. So the ballpark should be hopping this weekend, and I'm really, really looking forward to it.
Yeah, good luck. Hope you all at least take two from them. Be good for the conference.
Yeah, they're good. really good, too.
Yeah, and of course, we want you to beat up on them because we have them coming up as well on March 6th. We're playing them in Oxford. So that would be nice if you can rough them up a little bit for us.
Well, we're going to try. It's going to be tough to rough these guys up, though.
They're really good.
This is as good a lineup as you're going to see in college baseball, top to bottom. And, you know, they lost all their weekend pitching from a year ago, but, you know, they just reload, you know. They don't rebuild in a pitching sense. They just stick three new arms that can, you know, throw 93 with hammers. So that's what Ole Miss does. But, look, we got a confident group on our side, and we've got a very experienced veteran club. And it's just been fun to watch them the first five games of the year. And they're coming in here, Ole Miss is going to come in here and we'll be ready for them. I mean, this is a Tulane team that's looking forward to the challenge.
Yeah, baseball, Tulane doesn't have to back down to anybody.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely. You know, even it's funny, I was watching the Ole Miss the last couple of games, and they've had a couple of plays that have gone to review where, you know, when you're in the American Conference like Tulane and East Carolina, they don't have reviews.
We do.
So
now.
You have started now.
We just started.
East Carolina and Wichita are the only two schools in America doing review this year.
It's just going to be funny when Ole Miss players start pointing at reviews and they're not going to get one. I'm going to be highly amused at that. you know, little old Tulane, you're going to have to, you know, just kind of go what the umpire says here. So,
well, what are your thoughts on that, that the American is allowing reviews if you have it? It seems like it should, if everybody in the
all aboard,
all or nothing. I mean, I don't like that at all. I am not a big review guy in college baseball. I'm not a real big review guy anyway. College basketball, it's starting to take away. You know, college basketball games never, ever, ever used to go above 2 hours. They're 2:15. They're 2:15, 2:20 regularly now, and it's all because of review, guys. Don't let any other thing take that away, because it is all review. And if we start reviewing, you know, again, I was watching the Ole Miss game. The kid who's pitching against us tonight pitched last Saturday, and in the first two plays of the ball game, bang, bang, in the top of the first inning, they went to a review. They had played 15 minutes of real time, and they had, you know, one out in the top of the first inning. And if it's going to be like that, well, that's ridiculous. We don't need to see that. If you want to call fair fault, you know, fair foul, foul poles type of stuff, you know, you can live with that. But man, oh man, every single review, you know, every play at the plate is going to be reviewed. Well, why have umpires? Let's just, you know, just watch the game on television and go from there. But yeah, I'm going to love watching Ole Miss players start pointing at the dugout, and someone's going to be down there shaking their head. No, you can't get bailed out with a review this time.
Looking at the schedule, I see that you guys are coming back. I guess you can go back to AJ McMurphy's on April the
26th. Yeah, we're coming up. It's actually the weekend after Easter. We'll be back up there.
All right.
Yeah, by the way, before we let you go, I wanted to ask you about how are things looking for spring, hard to believe spring practice. When do you guys have it? Our starts East Carolina on March 15th.
Yeah, that's pretty much where when Tulane starts. I have not seen enthusiasm around a program like this in a very long time, guys.
Ditto.
Yeah, Willie Fritz has really, really turned the corner here, and he's got the kids themselves fired up to play spring ball. And you know, I'm not out there watching them work out every morning, like, you know, I do in the fall because we practice in the morning. But you know, right now they're kind of doing conditioning drills, and you know, I've talked to Coach Fritz privately a couple times in the last few weeks, and he's just really, really excited about how the kids are responding and the positivity and the energy around the program, and how everyone can't wait to go work out. And you know, again, that's just something, and he talked about it when he got here. You know, Tulane, we don't have a lot of winning around here. I mean, what, we've had five winning seasons in the last 30 or so years, and last year was one of them. And so just to get to his initial message of changing the culture and make it about winning, it didn't look good for a while last year, but we turned the corner in November and won the bowl game, which was massive. And now you do, it is discernible momentum. People think, oh, bowl games, they don't mean a whole lot. Well, it meant a whole lot around here, guys. Don't let anybody tell you differently. It meant a great deal for Tulane to win that game, because they do have now the discernible momentum heading into this spring football practice session. So, yeah, man, it's good stuff. It's good stuff.
We had, by the way, I don't know, Kyle, if you saw this, but I know Bubba, I'll give him credit. We found out on Wednesday was the very first day you could buy season tickets. If you don't think a coaching change makes a big difference, last year at this time, the very first day we sold 80 season tickets. Yeah. The very first day we sold 800 just a couple of days ago. So if you don't think a coaching change matters, or the enthusiasm having Coach Mike Houston here.
That's good. And I tell you what, we got a chance when we came there last month, we got a chance to see that new press box and suite area at Dowdy Ficklin. Man, it's going to look great. It really will be. So happy for everybody in East Carolina, because I've said many times, you guys deserve it. I mean, to me, you are the best program, you know, as far as town and school and fans, to me, in the league. So you should always play winning football at East Carolina. It's it hurts everybody when they're down, because you don't really expect it to happen.
And I was going to say, never again will I ever be upset about going to a bowl game. Like, whatever, like, before.
Kind of take it for granted, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah,
well,
correct.
Yeah. Well, that's the opposite around here. We'd like to get to a point where we're starting to take it for granted, and that's why I think this year's coming up is going to be so huge. Tulane has not gone to back-to-back bowl games since 1979 and 1980.
Wow.
So there you go. There you have it, huh? Go ahead.
There's one thing before we go, I want you to do for me, if you will. You guys do a chant.
We do.
Tulane fans. And I've tried to decipher the words, and I may have it, but I'm not sure. Can you do that for us before you go?
Yeah. So after every touchdown or / extra point and every run scored in baseball, there's a cheer called the Hullabaloo, and it goes back really to the 20s and the 30s, and they've been saying it's a Tulane for a very, very long time. And I know a lot of people from other schools come in and they start hearing it and they start looking at each other like, what in the world are these people saying? So it goes, hullabaloo, ray, ray, hullabaloo, ray, ray, hooray, hooray, varsa, varsa, TA, 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 varsa, varsa, TA, Tulane.
All right.
Well,
I had it close, but not quite. I missed a few words.
Obviously, the varsity A is varsity. You know?
Right.
Nobody
right.
says varsity A anymore. It was back in the olden times when they weren't wearing face masks and they were wearing leather helmets.
Correct.
Well, Graf, I promise you, Kyle will have it memorized. He'll stay up night after night, burning the midnight oil.
That's right.
Next time we have you on, I promise. Can you make that promise, Kyle?
Well, you know, I've been doing it for years since I heard of the Tulane fans doing it, but I've been saying it wrong. My version went 1-2, a hell of a hullabaloo.
Actually, you know, I apologize. You're supposed to do a 1-2. I apologize for that. But
okay,
yes,
but
you
I never
start
said,
a 1-2, a hell of a hullabaloo.
But I never said Varsa Varsa TA.
Yep, Varsa Varsa TA is very
I
important.
Said, like, I just made up some words there. I don't even know where they are.
T A T A Varsa Varsa T A.
Gotcha. All right.
All right. Well, Graf, thank you so much. I know that you're getting ready for a big weekend ahead. Hopefully, you guys will have great weather and get some wins over Ole Miss.
Sun just came out, guys. So that's a good sign.
All right. Well, enjoy the visit. Always appreciate you, and we'll have you back on, I guess, right after Easter.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
All right. Have a good one. Appreciate him very much. Thank you so much, Graf, and. He is so much fun. I tell you what, he had a lot of nice things to say about Greenville, and you almost get the feeling that maybe he should come and join Jeff Charles. What do you think? That's not going to happen. But
he loves Tulane. He's very complimentary of ECU football. Like you said, he thinks we are the best football program in the American, and we should always be winning and going to bowls. And I agree with him. And a great guy. A lot of fun to talk to. Very passionate about Tulane. He's a real dude. You just have a conversation with him. It's not like doing an interview. It's just like talking. And love having Graf on. Good luck to Tulane. I hope they end their losing streak after we beat them Saturday.
So, yeah, at least 16, right?
Exactly.
I'm sorry, Graf. We love you, man. But, you know, we love the Pirates.
I hope they sweep Ole Miss this weekend in baseball.
Yeah, that would be great. In fact, we got them coming up, as I was saying, in the interview in March. So, on spring break, in fact, no pressure. Your spring break, you're going to back-to-back to Ole Miss and Mississippi State. But, you know, like I was telling you, I told Cliff on the – I love him. He's a competitor like you, me, and Bubba. Anytime, anywhere, any place, it's like a street fighter. We're going to play you. And I love that about him, how his aggressive non-conference schedule is tremendous. And I will tell you one thing, folks. If East Carolina does as well as they have the potential to do with this non-conference schedule, it'll be a travesty if they – I don't think that's going to happen. I'll just leave that one alone. But East Carolina is, even though with the loss this week, if they do well, we'll see if the games in Monmouth, how that – in fact, folks, even if – and I wanted to mention this, even if we don't have the Monmouth games, we'll see how that plays out. then we'll still do the show, right? You, me, and Kyle. Kyle can tell jokes. I'm sure Bubba can give
well,
us
we'll
stats.
Get some of the Monmouth games in. I don't see every single game getting canceled.
Right.
To be sure. To be sure.
You can't do a triple header on Sunday.
Play two. I don't
yeah, know. They'll play a double. They would move it maybe a double header on. You have what is the rule that you have in American where you have to have the games done by a certain time?
It's a travel day. I think
yeah.
It's done by 4 o'clock on Sunday.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. Conference play. It doesn't apply to non conference games.
It doesn't. Okay, I wasn't sure then. All right, so we don't have to worry about that. So maybe you can have a double header, Monmouth, and it's going to be interesting to see.
As of right now, with a double header Saturday night, starting at 4 o'clock.
So let's just go. We'll stay positive.
Yeah,
we'll stay positive on that, and we will have, of course, we have two great coaches. The coach for Air Force, Coach Cass, he's going to be with us, and of course for Elon, we have them on Wednesday afternoon, and Coach Mike Kennedy will join us on Sunday night. So we've got two great coaches. Kind of giving you, Kyle had the idea, which he's correct. We're giving the preview. We're going to have a recap of the week and the preview ahead. So we'll have the two coaches coming up there. And then, of course, we'll have a preview, of course, for the Keith LeClair Classic coming up the following weekend. So much going on. And by the way, I want to mention, too, speaking of Keith LeClair, working really hard behind the scenes. We've got a great podcast, folks, a special coming up. We'll release that on the 28th, and this coming Thursday, it is going to be fantastic, right?
Yeah, it is. It's going to be a tribute to Keith LeClair. We're interviewing a lot of people that are important in Keith's life, or that Keith was important in their life, I should say. And we'll have that interview, or excuse me, we'll have that podcast out on the 28th, and it'll be evergreen. That's one that will always,
right.
You can go back in the archives and listen to. It'll always be relevant.
Yes, it will, and that's one thing that I'm proud of with this project, with the Sports Objective, is we're trying really hard to do different stuff and be different, and we were covering the Pirates, but maybe give it a different wrinkle, different things that we can do, and one thing that we have going for us with the podcast is we don't have to worry about networks or certain timing. Sometimes our podcasts are shorter, sometimes maybe they're epic, they're too long, but we try really hard to give you the best content we can, and I know with extra innings, it'll be a different wrinkle where you have a chance to call in. So that's something we're working really hard on behind the scenes. And do you want to? Can you give that number again, Kyle, for extra innings before we go?
Dave, I actually cannot. I do not have it in front of me right now.
Okay.
I cannot.
All right, I got to memorize the daggone number. But anyway, we'll have it.
Guys, if you need the number again, we're on the podcast.
Yeah, exactly. This is at the very beginning. Towards the beginning. So, anyway, my friend, we'll and also before we go, let's go to. I was getting ready to sign off, but Bubba's been working really hard on a ECU sports report with teams this weekend, and I don't want to leave him out. So, Bubba, take it away.
I appreciate it, Dave. Here's a look at what's taken place in ECU athletics over the last few days, and what's on the docket this weekend. Football. The start of spring football is quickly approaching, and 2019 season tickets went on sale on Wednesday. More than 1,000 tickets have already been sold. Get yours today by calling 1-800-ECU or by simply going online to ecupirates.com. There's no doubt you will want to be in Dowdy-Ficklin this fall. Men's basketball. The Pirates will be looking to snap a 5-game skid on Saturday night in New Orleans when they take on the Tulane Green Wave at Devlin Fieldhouse. Devlin Fieldhouse is a place in which ECU's had a lot of success of late, as they've recorded 5 straight wins in the series in New Orleans. Tip-off is at 8 p.m. on ESPNU. The Pirates have won 5 of their last 6 meetings with the Green Wave, and their victory over Mike Dunleavy Senior's club on January 31st was the last time the team was in the winner's circle. Tulane leads the all-time series with the Pirates 13-12. Sean Williams poured in 29 points and was a perfect 6 of 6 from beyond the arc in last season's win in New Orleans. Baseball. Following a 7-6 midweek loss at in-state foe Campbell, the 9th-ranked Pirates are scheduled to return to action on Saturday afternoon when they host a doubleheader against Monmouth at 4 p.m. Join us on Sunday evening for extra innings as we will take a look back at the series between the Pirates and the Hawks. Women's basketball. The Pirates are now 13-13 overall and 4-9 in the American after Wednesday's 63-50 home loss to USF. ECU trailed by just 2 points through three quarters, but the Bulls dominated down the stretch to win by 13. Raven Johnson posted a double-double as she recorded 15 points and 10 rebounds. Meanwhile, LaShonda Monk also reached double figures as she recorded 12 points and dished out 7 assists. The Pirates return to action on Saturday afternoon when they host Cincinnati at 5 p.m. in Minji's on ESPN3. Softball. After sweeping the Pirate Clash last weekend, ECU is off to an 8-1 start. Courtney Oliver's club returns to action on Saturday afternoon when it plays ACC foe Boston College in the Pirate Invitational. First pitch is scheduled for 5 p.m. at the ECU Softball Stadium. The Pirates will then play a twin bill on Sunday as they again face off with BC at 11:30 before hosting James Madison at 2. Sophomore shortstop Ashley Ine leads the team with her .538 average and is one of four Pirates batting over .400. ECU's potent lineup has generated 24 extra base hits, including 8 home runs. Sophomore Erin Pepping has been brilliant in the circle as she is now 6-0 with a 1.12 ERA. Women's lacrosse. After its road loss at number 3 North Carolina, Amanda's Barnes club, resumed their winning ways as they posted a 10-9 road win at George Washington on Friday to improve to 3-1. The Pirates will be back in action on Sunday afternoon at Delaware State. Men's golf. ECU men's golf will return to action on March the 4th when they host the ECU Intercollegiate at Greenville's Brook Valley Country Club. Meanwhile, the women will resume competition on Saturday, March the 9th, when they travel to Gainesville, Florida to compete in the SunTrust Gator Women's Invitational at the Mark Bostic Golf Course. Men's and women's swimming and diving. ECU men's and women's swimming and diving teams continued their streak of success as they have finished at or above 500 for 36 consecutive seasons. During the 2018-19 season, ECU swimmer and divers compiled 32 all-time top 10 performances, with 5 swimmers recording NCAA B qualifying marks and 4 divers qualifying for the Zone B regional championships. ECU will compete in the 2019 American Athletic Conference Championships in Indianapolis on February 27th through March the 2nd. Men's tennis. The Pirates are now 10-1 and have won 5 straight matches after recording road wins at UConn, Boston University, and Bryant. They return to action today when they play Stetson in Statesboro, Georgia. Women's tennis. The women have also recorded 5 straight victories after blanking Coastal Carolina 4-0 on Friday at the ECU Indoor Tennis Facility. The Pirates host UNCG on Saturday afternoon at 1:30. Men's and women's track. The Pirates are in Alabama this weekend competing in the AAC Indoor Championships at the Birmingham Crossplex. Day 1 for the women was highlighted by sophomore Mackenzie Whitaker claiming the silver medal in the long jump. On the men's side, senior Nick Cha-Cha finished 5th in the 5,000 meters with a time of 14 minutes and 36.67 seconds, while fellow senior Hakeem Horton took 4th in the long jump with a jump of 7.32 meters. That does it for me, Dave. Go Pirates!
All right, Kyle. Well, Bubba did a great job. I know he's been working hard. He was with us on the Mike DeCourcy interview, and it's kind of a team effort to put these shows together.
And correct. I appreciate yeah, and before the interview, Dave, you asked me for the number, and again to call in to join us Sunday night for Sports Objective Extra Innings, hopefully from 7 to 9 p.m. That number is 909-265-9235.
All right, appreciate that very much. And again, extra innings on Sunday night. Good luck to the Pirates tonight as they have, with 2 games of baseball. We also have it with Monmouth, and we have, of course, the big game tonight on the road with basketball. Good luck against Tulane. Hopefully we can finally get our first road win. As the draft said, we've won 6 straight in New Orleans against Tulane, so we'll hopefully make it the lucky 7. We'll see. For Bubba Rosenbaum, and of course we had the great guest Mike DeCourcy, Todd Graffernini, and the great one Kyle from LaGrange Barber. I'm Dave Richmond for the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.